Okay. As promised, tonight is the Purim Shir. And again, it becomes challenging the more you, I find for myself, the more years you're in Rabbanus and the more years you have to say Shiurim, and the more you're makpid to try to not repeat, the more challenging it becomes from year to year. So this year I decided to pick something I've definitely never spoken about before, and that's a very fascinating Vilna Gaon on Purim, which Rav Huttner in three different places speaks about, amplifies, and gives us a very unique insight into Purim itself. So I'm going to basically present three different complementary pieces from the Pachad Yitzchak on Purim. The Pachad Yitzchak is the collected mamorim of Rav Yitzchak Huttner, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the esteemed longtime Rosh Hashiva Chaim Berlin, of course, as we all know. And in all three of these places, he speaks about a particular idea from the Vilna Gaon, and it's clear he himself makes reference to the fact that apparently he must have had a fondness for this idea of the Vilna Gaon, because he himself mentions, I keep coming back to this idea from the Vilna Gaon over and over again. So apparently this was something that he liked very much. I'm not sure where the Vilna Gaon is in its original form, but the Vilna Gaon speaks about a concept that most of us probably have heard at some point or another. I always heard it attributed to the Arizal, and this is not to say that it's not from the Arizal, but the Vilna Gaon took this idea that perhaps is originally from the Arizal, and he gave it a spin of his own. The idea is that there's a linkage between Purim and Yom Kippur. Because after all, right, Yom Kippur in the Torah is referred to as Yom Kippurim. And if you're willing to play a little bit loose with the laws of Diktuk, a little bit, so it's Yom Kippurim, right? And it's a day like Purim. So apparently there's some kind of connection. This, I always heard it attributed to the Arizal. There's some kind of connection between Purim and Yom Kippur.
They
fasted. What's that?
They fasted on Yom
Kippur.
You fast, and they also fasted.
Well, they didn't fast on Purim, though. Right? They fasted on Pesach. Right? It was the 3-day fast. Actually fell out during Pesach, in the beginning of Pesach, and they fasted according to tradition on the day before Purim, on Tainus Esther, when they had the war. But Purim, they seem to have eaten ganz fine. You know, it doesn't seem like fasting was really part of the Purim experience. So in what sense is there this linkage between Purim and Yom Kippur? So let me read you the words of the Vilna Gaon, as quoted by Rav Huttner. And he writes as follows. Hine ha-mehalach b'chol yom tov, hu chetzio l'ashem, v'chetzio lochem. The standard way in which a yom tov is observed is that we divide up the activities that we do on that yom tov. Half of the Yom Tov, half of the day is dedicated to Hashem, meaning spiritual pursuits. We daven, we learn, we engage in spiritual things. And the other half of the Yom Tov is Lachem, for you, for us, for the Jewish people, where we engage in physical pursuits, eating and drinking and the like. The source for this idea is the Gemara Masechta Beitza, where the Gemara, after some debate, the opinion which is accepted practically speaks of this dual nature of Yom Tov, Chatzi Lachem, Chatzi Lashem. Half of it is for you, half of it is for God. And it's interesting to note that the Rambam, when he speaks about Hilchos Yom Tov, actually understands this in a very, very literal sense. The Rambam writes that we wake up on Yom Tov morning, we daven Vasikin, we daven at the earliest possible time when the sun is rising. So right there, you know that we're not Maimonidean in our orientation over here, right? Maybe you are, I don't know, I'm just speaking for myself. I don't daven Vasikin on Yom Tov, far from it, right? But the Rambam writes that the way a Yom Tov is supposed to work is that we get up, we daven Vasikin, we daven at the earliest possible time, and then we spend the morning davening and learning up until midday. And at midday, says the Rambam, we sit down to our meal, and that basically occupies us for the balance of Yom Tov. So in other words, the Rambam understands Chatzi Lashem, Chatzi Lochem, half for God and half for you, in a very real and literal sense, you know, you know, comes the midday bell on Yom Tov, and all of a sudden we put aside our spiritual affairs and we attend to our physical affairs. That's, again, when we talk about Yom Tov in this context, it means the biblical Yom Tov. Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos, which are characterized by this this duality of character. Shnei Zmanim, I'm going back to the Vilna Gaon, quoted by Rav Hutner. Shnei Zmanim Yotzim Heim Min HaKlal Hazeh. There are two exceptions on the Jewish calendar to this idea of taking a Yom Tov and dividing it half for us and half for God. Yom Kippur, Hu Kulo Lashem. Yom Kippur is entirely for God, for the Ribbono Shel Olam, right? Upurim Hu Kulo Lachem, and Purim is entirely for us.
Right.
So we're going to have to explain this a little bit.
Because,
right. Apparently, in the Goyim's clothes, there was apparently must have been a very fast Balkare, you know, so did it very, very quickly. Right? So, okay, we'll have to talk about this because, you know, what exactly this means, I think, needs a little bit of clarification itself. But so, these are Dvar Hakdoshim Shel Avil Nagon. You know, that Yom Kippur is entirely for God, and Purim is entirely for us. Elul shalakushta demilsa ein kan shum yotze min haklal. But the truth is, says the Vilna Gaon, it's not pshat that Yom Kippur and Purim are exceptions to the rule. It's not that the rule is generally that you have a day which is half and half, and Yom Kippur is one extreme and Purim is the other extreme. No, that's a misunderstanding. Ki Yom Kippurim Hu Yom Kippurim, because Yom Kippur and Purim are linked. Klomar Shneim Biyachad Mehavim BeInyan Zeh Moed Echad. Says the Vilna Gaon, and this is the crux of the Chiddush of the Vilna Gaon. Yom Kippur and Purim are really just two sides of the same coin. It's the same Yom Tov. So it's not that one is entirely for God, one is entirely for us. There's this holiday called Yom Kippur Purim, right, that spreads out over 2 days over the course of the year, and they are two halves that complement one another. Uvamoed hazeh hakol el Purim v'Yom Kippur, shapir miskayim bo chesi l'Hashem v'chesi l'Hashem. And this sort of unusual holiday, this holiday that stretches out over 48 hours, is half for us and half for God, just like every single other Yom Tov is. The only difference between this Yom Tov and other Yom Tovim is that other Yom Tovim, you manage to get the both of the components into a 24-hour period, and here we stretch out the two components over a 48-hour period, and by the way, a 48-hour period which is not contiguous, right, as Yom Kippur is in Tishrei, and Purim is in Adar, and by the way, Yom Kippur is a biblical holiday, and Purim is a rabbinic holiday, okay, so I hear all of that. But nonetheless, says the Vilna Gaon, on some level, right, Yom Kippur and Purim are opposites that complement one another, because put together, they are the same as every other Yom Tov is. Every other Yom Tov has these two aspects. In Yom Kippur and Purim, the two aspects are spread out over the course of these 2 days. So says the Vilna Gaon. Now, even that, even before we get to Rav Hutner's explanation, even that requires, some degree of explanation. What does it mean that Purim is kulo lachem? What does it mean that Purim belongs to us entirely? First of all, you're telling me that there's no spiritual component to Purim? So I can skip davening on Purim, right? As we said before, so I can skip Megillah on Purim, right? When a guy oversleeps, right? As we used to have women's Megillah reading in the house, let me clarify that. I used to lay Megillah in the house for women who, wanted a later Megillah reading, you know, either at night or during the morning. And often, always, there were some men who joined that reading because didn't quite make it to the regular minyan on Purim morning, and a few times I think we actually had a minyan of men, that joined us for the quote-unquote women's reading, just because it was a little bit hard to get up on the morning after Purim. So if they only had known of this Vilna Gaon, they could have saved themselves a lot of trouble. The Vilna Gaon says, Purim is kula lachem. It's all for you. You don't have to worry about any spiritual things whatsoever, right? Clearly, that's not true. Right? Clearly, there's a mitzvah of Megillah. There's a mitzvah of Tefillah. You know, there are spiritual things on Purim. Right? Stalker.
Right?
Right? So what do you mean? What does the Vilna Gaon mean? That Purim is kula lachem. What's more, there's an explicit Gemara that seems to contradict this idea of the Vilna Gaon. The Gemara says in Shabbos, Hakol Modim bePurya deBoinim Nami Lachem. Everybody agrees that on Purim you also have to have a component which is for you. The implication seems to be you also have to have a component which is for you, but you have to have a component which is for Hashem. Right. So, what does the Vilna Gaon mean by this? So someone seems to have asked Rav Huttner the same question, and in a footnote, a longer footnote towards the end of the Pachad Yitzchak on Purim, he makes the following statement. He says, why is it that I describe Purim as being kulo lachem, as being entirely for us? So he quotes a Gemara Masechta Megillah, where the Gemara explains the evolution of the holiday of Purim in the following fashion. It's noteworthy, if you look in the Megillah itself, towards the end, when you have all those psukim that describe how Mordechai instituted the holiday of Purim, it seems as if there was a Purim plan A and a Purim plan B. There was what Mordechai, what the people originally were thinking about accepting, and what they ended up accepting in the end of the day. Originally, when the Jews are described as contemplating keeping the holiday of Purim, Purim is described as a Yom Tov in the Megillah itself. Subsequently, when Mordechai writes to the Jews and tells them that they're supposed to keep Purim every year on the 14th of Adar, he talks about how it's supposed to be Yom Mishteh v'Simcha, u'mishloach manos ish l'reyehu, u'matanos le'evyonim, and there's no mention of the idea of Yom Tov anymore. So Chazal and the Gemara say the following. They say that originally, when the idea of making a holiday of Purim was first proposed, the original plan A of Purim was to make it a Yom Tov in the sense in which we normally understand it. Right? A prohibition against work. Right? The people did not accept this prohibition against work. They weren't comfortable with the idea of making Purim a Yom Tov. So Mordechai moved on to plan B, which was, okay, keep Purim as a quote-unquote weekday with no Isser Malacha, with no prohibition against doing work, but just have Mishteh v'Simcha Mishloach Manos Ish L'Reyehu U'Matanos L'Evyonim, just have these other components. So yes, Rav Huttner, what does that mean? Meaning, Mordechai comes to the people and says, guess what, we're going to have this holiday called Purim, and it's going to be a Yom Tov where you're not allowed to do any work. The people look around and say, what? Another Yom Tov? Nah. Rabbi say, let's take a vote. Who's all in favor? Say aye. Okay, the silence is deafening. All opposed? Say nay. Nay. Sorry, Mordechai, we voted down the idea of a Yom Tov on Purim. That's what happened. How did it work? Wait, the people weren't makabel. They didn't accept the idea of a Yom Tov. Why is it up to them? If Mordechai wants to make it into a Yom Tov, so he makes it into a Yom Tov. Why is this? Since when is this a democracy? That we put it to a popular vote. So explains Rav Huttner, obviously when the people didn't want to accept it as a Yom Tov, it wasn't just, that's not convenient, we can't deal with the idea of it being a Yom Tov. Obviously they had some kind of insight into the kind of day that Purim was supposed to be, and they understood that Purim fundamentally shouldn't be a Yom Tov. Because, explains Rav Huttner, the element of a Yom Tov, that's the Isser Malacha, the prohibition against work, is what makes the day Chetz Yol Hashem, is what makes the day being partially God's. Right? It's the Isser Malacha that says that we can't do whatever we want on this day, that makes it Chetz Yol Hashem, a day which is partially belonging to God. And the people understood that Purim, as per the Vilna Gaon, had to be Kula Lachem, had to be entirely in the possession of the Jewish people, meaning a day, not a day that didn't have any spiritual component. We always have to daven every day. It certainly makes sense to read the Megillah to recall what happened, and the Megillah is a form of tefillah as well. But in other words, there shouldn't be any prohibition on us as an Isser Malacha. We should be free and unfettered in that sense, free to enjoy, free to have Mishta V'Simcha, and to run around the five boroughs of New York delivering Mishlach Manos to each and every one of our thousand closest friends, right? We should have the freedom to be able to do that on Purim, right? Unrestricted. So the people understood that the idea of Ches, of Kula Lachem, of making Purim a holiday that's entirely ours, precluded it from being a day of Isser Malacha. Right? So let me just summarize just in terms of us. Basically, the Vilna Gaon is saying the sense in which Purim is Kula Lachem, is entirely ours, is the fact that it's a weekday without any prohibition against work. Right? Clearly, it has spiritual components, because every day, you know, there isn't a day that goes by on the Jewish calendar that doesn't have some spiritual component in some way or another. But the fact that Purim, by design, is not a Yom Tov means that it's supposed to be ours as opposed to belonging to Hashem. We're not giving Hashem his full due. We did that on Yom Kippur. We were very spiritually oriented on Yom Kippur. Today's the day we're primarily engaging in the physical, and the absence of an Isser Malacha highlights that particular idea. Okay, so that's a little bit of an explanation of this idea of the Vilna Gaon. But Rav Huttner says, let's try to understand that itself on a deeper level. Why would there be this phenomena that there's Yom Kippur on the one hand, Kulo Lashem, and Purim on the other hand, that's Kulo Lachem? Why take these two elements and bifurcate them into two different days? What exactly is the message which is meant to be conveyed by that? So to try to address this Vilna Gaon and to understand the Vilna Gaon a little better, Rav Huttner quotes a very perplexing Talmudic passage from Masechta Shabbos, and he quotes in conjunction with that a very fascinating explanation from Itzler Peterberger. He's one of the great geniuses of the Musar movement in Lithuania in the 19th century. Here's the Gemara. The Gemara describes as follows. At the end of days, God is going to be very frustrated with the Jewish people. And he's going to go to Avraham Avinu and say, Bonecha chotu, your children have sinned. And Avraham Avinu, says the Gemara, is going to answer, all right, so God, do away with them. God, do away with them. Seems like a harsh response. So the Ribbono Shel Olam goes down the line to Yaakov Avinu. And he says, Bonecha chotu, your sons, your children have sinned. So Yaakov Avinu says, okay, God, do what you got to do. Again, not very encouraging. God is looking for some support for the Jewish people from the Avos, but it doesn't seem to be forthcoming. God goes to Yitzchak Avinu. And Yitzchak says as follows, Ribbono Shel Olam, how much could the Jews have sinned already? They spend X number of hours sleeping. They spend X number of hours involved in davening. They spend X number of hours just, you know, attending to their basic physical needs. He makes the cheshbon, how much have they been awake and be even able to sin already? You know, he makes the calculation, and then Yitzchak says to the Ribbono Shel Olam, I'll tell you what, Ribbono Shel Olam, let's divide the difference. Palga alai, I'll be responsible for half of the hours that they've sinned. Upalga aloch, and half of it you'll be responsible for, Ribbono Shel Olam. God says to Yitzchak Avinu, Yitzchak, you're the best negotiator that the Jewish people has. You got a deal. I'll bear half of the sins of the Jewish people. You bear the other half, and between the two of us, we can bail the Jewish people out. Now, this is an extremely perplexing Gemara. Right, what does this mean? God negotiates with Yitzchak Avinu, or better yet, Yitzchak Avinu negotiates with the Ribbono Shel Olam to get the Jews off the hook, and in a manner that seems reminiscent of the Shuk more than anything else. How many hours is it anyway, Ribbono Shel Olam? I'll give you, I'll see your bet, then I'll raise you. Right? It seems like what kind of conversation is going on between Yitzchak Avinu and the Ribbono Shel Olam? Right? Clearly, when you encounter a Maimer Chazal like this, clearly Chazal are trying to tell us something, right? This is not just.
He wants to find a schus for them.
Right, but what kind of schus? Mm-hmm. If you say, well, they've done this, they've done that, okay, Melo. If you say, well, you know, how much bad could they have done already? Let's divide it up between the two of us. That doesn't really sound like a schus. That sounds like, you know, maybe a very good lawyer, right? But, you know, it doesn't seem like anything substantive. I mean, if I were the judge, I would probably throw that one out of court, right? So what's going on over here? So Rav Yitzchak Lepeterberger, in explaining this Gemara, quotes a statement of the rabbis from the end of the second parak of Brachos. There, Rabbi Alexandri, one of the rabbis, is described how he used to say the following tefillah every day at the end of davening, at the end of Shemoneh Esrei. He would say as follows, Ribbono Shel Olam, you know that Ritzoneinu La'asos Ritzoncha. You know that really deep down our will is to do your will. Deep down, even those of us who are doing the wrong thing know that we're doing the wrong thing, and we really wish that we could be doing the right thing. Deep down we know, you know, what the right thing is to do. So what's holding us back from doing what's right? So Alexandria identifies two different things. Sa'ar shebe'isa v'shibud malchius. The two things that are holding us back are the sourdough in the dough and the subjugation of the kingdoms. Okay, so now it's all clear. The only two things that are holding us back from being fine, good, upstanding Jews are sourdough and subjugation. Okay, Gevaldik. Alright, so now life is good. What on earth does that mean? So it's Rashi right over there. Let's start with the second one. The subjugation of the kingdoms is anti-Semitism. Right? We'd like to be good Jews, but unfortunately, throughout our long history, anti-Semitism has been a real force in the world, and anti-Semitism just simply doesn't allow us to be as good Jews as we'd like to be. Right? You know, we've gone through so many persecutions where we can't always keep the mitzvahs. Or even where there are no anti-Semitic decrees, we find ourselves in ghettos and states of affairs where, you know, the living conditions are, you know, present a challenge, and not everybody's up to the challenge, right? So that's one reason that we're not as religious as we'd like to be. Anti-Semitism. What's the other reason? So it explains Rashi there in the Gemara, the Sa'ar Shebe'isa, the sourdough in the dough,
make a living,
is a metaphoric reference to the Yetzer Hara, to the evil inclination. That's why this is a Purim Shir, but we'll put a little bit of Pesach in here, you know, just to scare everybody, right? One of the ideas of Pesach in getting rid of the Chametz is that the Chametz symbolizes the Yetzer Hara, symbolizes the evil inclination. That analogy goes back to this Gemara. I think this is the first place in print that idea appears. Rabbi Alexander says, the Sa'ar Shebe'isa, inside every one of us there's the Yetzer Hara who puffs us up just like sourdough leavens other doughs. Back in the day, they weren't able to isolate yeast as a bacteria by itself. So if you wanted to take dough and make it leavened, you would take sourdough, which has bacteria in it, you would throw it into a dough, and the sourdough, the pungency of the sourdough, would cause the dough to leaven. Inside each and every one of us there's the Yetzer Hara, which is causing us to leaven, so to speak, to get too big for our britches, and we rebel against God. So there are two things that are keeping us from being as religious as we'd like to be: the Yetzer Hara and anti-Semitism. If those two things were just removed, says Rabbi Alexandri, every Jew naturally would want to do God's will, and there would be nothing holding us back. So it says Rabbi Alexandri in his daily prayer, God, help us get rid of these two things that are holding us back. Help us get rid of the Yetzer Hara on the one hand, and help us come out of the anti-Semitism, the subjugation of the kingdoms, which is holding us back on the other hand. Says Rabbi Yitzchak Lepeterberger, this idea from the Gemara in Brachos, you know, that there are two things that are holding back every Jew from being the best Jew that he or she can be, the Yetzer Hara and anti-Semitism, is really what's going on there in the negotiations between Yitzchak and the Ribbono Shel Olam. Right? It's not a negotiation of the shuk. But really what's going on is as follows. God comes to Yitzchak Avinu and he says, you know, your children have sinned. And I really, you know, I feel that there's a need to punish them. Says Yitzchak back to the Ribbono Shel Olam, whatever they've sinned is due to two causes. Either the Yetzirah or anti-Semitism. Who gave them the Yetzirah? Ribbono Shel Olam. It was you. In a sense, you're at fault. He said, how can Yitzchak talk to the Ribbono Shel Olam in such a way? So we find Midrashim where Moshe Rabbeinu talks to the Ribbono Shel Olam that way. Moshe Rabbeinu, after the Chet HaEgel, goes to the Ribbono Shel Olam and says, what are you blaming the people? You gave them all this gold. What do you want from them?
Erase me from
the book. Erase me from the book. So, in a similar vein, says Rabbi Yitzchak of Heidelberger, Yitzchak Avinu goes to the Ribbono Shel Olam and says, God, it's half your fault. It's half your fault. You gave the people a Yetzer Hara. So that Yetzer Hara is causing them to leave the proper path. It's half your fault. But you know what, Ribbono Shel Olam? It's also half my fault. Now why is it half my fault? So says Yitzchak, I brought a son into the world who's responsible ultimately for all of the anti-Semitism that we as the Jewish people face. I brought into the world Esav, who's the ultimate nemesis of the Jewish people. Esav is the grandfather of Amalek. Right? It all goes back to Esav. Whatever anti-Semitism is in the world is ultimately a result of Esav and his enmity for the Jewish people. So you know, I'm partially to blame also, Ribbono Shel Olam. So Ribbono Shel Olam, let's make a deal. You take responsibility for giving the Jewish people a Yetzer Hara. I'll take responsibility for bringing Esav into the world and creating anti-Semitism. And if we both accept responsibility for our role in the collective sinning of the Jewish people, so we can call it quits. All of the sins that the Jewish people do can in one way or another be related back to either the Yetzer Hara or to anti-Semitism. So Ribbono Shel Olam, let's shake on it. We have a deal. You know, we're each responsible for a part, for a half of this collective sinning of the Jewish people. No. So Ribbono Shel Olam, let's make a deal. We'll accept responsibility and we'll exonerate the Jewish people. Right? This explains, by the way, why it's Davka Yitzchak in the story who can negotiate this deal with God. Now, all the Mefarshim ask this question, what's so great? Why Yitzchak? Avram Avinu is the paragon of Chesed. Yaakov Avinu, you know, represents the Jewish people as a whole. It's called, the Jewish people is called Bnei Yisrael, right? Because of Yisrael. So how come they weren't such good negotiators for us? How come Yitzchak, out of all the Ovos, is the one who's able to negotiate this deal? Avram and Yaakov don't seem interested in being able to negotiate the deal.
Haman was also a descendant of Esau.
Right. That's where we're going. Right? So that's what Yitzchak Petterberger explains. So that's how Yitzchak had this unique negotiating tactic that he could play with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Only he could claim responsibility in a direct sense for Esau.
Because he was brought
because he was the father of Esau. He was the father of Esau. Not only was the father of Esau, he showed favoritism towards Esau. Yeah. You know, Esau wasn't just this kid that he sent out. Yitzchak was ready to give the brachas to Esau. So in a sense, whatever he did do for Esau set Esau up as the ultimate nemesis of the Jewish people. Esau is the paragon of anti-Semitism.
So, Esav son of Yaakov.
Right, halacha he biyodua she Esav son is Yaakov.
Esav had something in his corner.
Yeah.
He was known for observing Kizud Av.
Right.
And that helped Haman, because Haman was a descendant of Esav, so he had that in his corner. So anyone who had to overcome Esav had to observe the mitzvah of Kibbud Avam to the nth degree.
Mm-hmm.
And it was and who does that? The mitzvah of Kibbud Avam is the most difficult mitzvah. So that's why Esther was chosen to do the job.
Ain't la'avayim. Oh, very nice. That's a beautiful
show.
Who's the explanation? Yeah, it's a beautiful explanation.
Because the question, why was Esther a young girl?
Right.
I mean, sure, there were people more prepared for a job of helping a nation and taking care of Haman. I mean, she was a young girl because it's very hard to find a person who observed the mitzvah, kibud av v'em.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful.
And so she didn't have to do it. She had no parents.
It's a beautiful word. What are you doing Shabbos? Maybe maybe we can get a drasha out of it. Or I could say it over. B'shem Omru. I don't know what I'm saying Shabbos yet. It's good. Shabbos leading into Purim. So it definitely works. Okay. So maybe we'll talk after the shiur. I'll get all the makaris.
Shabbos Zachar, just the time.
That's this very very creative explanation that Rabbi Zvi Petterberg gives to this Gemara. You know, it's not, again, with that explanation, it's not just this strange negotiation. You take care and I'll take care. This is really hearkening back to the very causes of sin. There are two causes of sin for the Jewish people: our Yetzer Hara and our exposure to anti-Semitism. And those are the two halves of the puzzle, the two pieces in the puzzle that move, you know, to the extent to which Jews are sinning is because of one or both of those two components. So comes Rav Huttner, and he takes this idea from Rav Yisrael Petterberger, and he plugs it back into the Vilna Gaon. Again, let's just, we wandered a little far afield over here. Let's try to bring everything back together. The Vilna Gaon said that Purim and Yom Kippur are two halves of the same whole. They accomplish the same thing, but they complement one another. They come from opposite perspectives. Yom Kippur is the day on which we're devoted entirely to God. Purim is a day on which we're devoted entirely to ourselves and our physicality. So now explains the Vilna Gaon as follows. Hayachas hazeh ben Yom Kippur lePurim, this connection between Yom Kippur and Purim, omed hu besod shel palgo alai upalgo aloch, is exactly the same thing that Yitzchak was saying to the Ribbono shel Olam, you take care and I'll take care. The two, as we explained before, the two halves that Yitzchok speaks of, right? God's half and our half. They're the two reasons that ultimately underlie the sinning of the Jewish people. God is responsible for giving us the Yetzer Hara. We are responsible, or Yitzchok is responsible for having brought Esav and anti-Semitism into the world. And therefore he says as follows, Kanu makom atziruf shel Purim b'yom Kippur, ki chalukas shnei hazmanim halolu, hu sila kacheshbon shnei ha'akvim halolu. Purim and Yom Kippur respectively each serve to remove one of these two things that's preventing us from doing God's will. On Yom Kippur, we remove the Yetzer Hara. Yom Kippur is all about how we imitate the angels, the malachim. It's the day on which we become totally godlike. And the Yetzer Hara, which causes us to sin, is taken away on such a day. Purim is the day which represents the removal of anti-Semitism. Purim is not just the removal of the anti-Semitism of Haman, but Purim is supposed to be a prototype for how anti-Semites throughout the generations will ultimately be dealt with by the Ribbono Shel Olam. And I don't have to remind the people here, it wasn't too many years ago, during the first Gulf War, that Saddam Hussein's war against Eretz Yisrael came to an end on Purim. Right? How appropriate. Right? Ken Yovdu Kol Ayvecha Hashem, right? The modern day Haman, you know, was stopped on Purim as well. If we can just remove these two things, the Yetzer Hara and anti-Semitism, the natural Jewish inclination for wanting to do God's will is going to rise automatically to the fore. Says Rav Huttner, that's what the Vilna Gaon means, that Purim and Yom Kippur are really just two sides of the same coin.
The meanings of both words are different.
Clearly the idea Yom Kippurim is cute more than anything else, but what the Gra is saying, what the Vilna Gaon is saying, is that beyond the linguistic similarity, which again, you know, again, from a pure grammatical point of view, yeah, clearly, one is l'chaper and one is a pur. Well, you know, the word Purim isn't even Hebrew, right? Purim is the Persian word, you know, hippo pur hua goro, right? The word for lot in Hebrew is goro, not pur. It's the Persian word. But nonetheless, the Vilna Gaon is pointing to the fact that the linguistic similarity points to the to a similar idea, which both of them address. Each holiday, Purim and Yom Kippur, removes one side of the problem which faces us. Yom Kippur takes away the idea of the Eitz Sahara. Purim takes away the idea of anti-Semitism. If you put Yom Kippur and Purim together, if we're really able to internalize the message of Yom Kippur and Purim, we should be perfect Jews. Right, because each of those holidays together removes the problems that beset us from within. Let's come back to an issue which we raised when we were first speaking about the Vilna Gaon's idea that Purim and Yom Kippur complement one another. We said, how can that be? How can there be two sides of the same coin? Yom Kippur is a holiday that comes from the Torah. Purim didn't exist until many centuries after the Torah was given. So how can you tell me that these are two sides to the same coin when they're separated not only by, you know, many months, but many, many years historically? You know, how is it that Yom Kippur was by itself for so many years before Purim came to exist? I think the answer is as follows. Theoretically, there shouldn't be such a thing as anti-Semitism. Right? In other words, the Eitz Hara was implanted in us from the very beginning of creation. But theoretically, there should have been a period of time during which we had to fight against the Eitz Hara from within, but we didn't necessarily have to fight any enemies, any anti-Semitism from without. Theoretically, we should have gone straight into Eretz Yisrael, built the Beis HaMikdash, and all should have been well in the world. The fact that we go into Golus and have to deal with that kind of anti-Semitism is a later historical development and leads to the creation of another problem that we now have to deal with. Not just the Eitz Hara from within, but the problems of anti-Semitism from without. So Yom Kippur, although Yom Kippur is always part of the Jewish calendar, Purim only emerges later on because the problem Purim deals with, the problem of anti-Semitism, is only one that comes into existence later on in history. But fundamentally, the problem that Purim is trying to solve, how can we remove those things, those obstacles which are holding Jews back from doing what's right, that issue which Purim is addressing is the same issue ultimately as the issue of Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur wants to take Jews who are imperfect and make them perfect. So Yom Kippur's answer to the question of how do we work on the perfection of Jewish people is to say, try to remove the Eitz Hara, try to fight the Eitz Hara. Purim tries to make Jewish people more perfect by removing the scourge of anti-Semitism. If you just didn't have anti-Semitism, so then we would be more perfect. So they're working in the same direction. They're working to try to achieve the same thing. Purim is a form of kapara as well, not just because of the wordplay, because Purim recognizes that if we only took away anti-Semitism, we would be in a much better place and be much more ready to be the kind of Jews that we possibly could be.
But we can, Yom Kippur, we can do. We can say we're starting new. We're not. Right. But anti-Semitism, we're not the Balabatim over.
Oh, so in a sense we are, because what part of the message of Purim is not just let's recall how an anti-Semite fell once upon a time. Part of the message of Purim is that the koach of Purim can be harnessed by us if we daven properly, to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to intercede and to eliminate the anti-Semites all around the world. That's part of what we're supposed to be doing on Purim. You know, what's the avodah of Purim? Mishtev, Simcha, and all of that. But part of what we're davening for on Purim is, God, remove anti-Semitism. On Yom Kippur, we daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, remove the Eitz Sahara. On Purim, we daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we get rid of our other problem. What's our other problem? Our other problem is anti-Semites. That's, again, ultimately God is the balabas over anti-Semitism, not us, but our tefillah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu on Purim is supposed to be, just as you knock down Haman by Yomim HaHeim, so too you should knock down, and we'll refrain from giving the long list, but you should knock down all of the people who are modern-day Hamans Bizman Hazet. That's the avoda and the tefillah and what, you know, Purim is ultimately all supposed to be about. Just to take this idea from Rav Huttner, the way he's explaining in the Vilna Gaon that Purim and Yom Kippur complement one another, let's just take that idea and bring it one step further. Both Yom Kippur and Purim also share something else in common. They're both accompanied by a Kabbalah HaTorah, by an acceptance of the Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu comes down on Yom Kippur holding the Luchos Shnios, the second set of tablets, the second set of Luchos, the Luchos that were going to be permanent. The first set of Luchos he had come down with on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, and that didn't really work out that well. Right? He saw the Egel Azov and boom, you know, smashed the Luchos. The Luchos which are permanent come down from Shamayim with Moshe Rabbeinu on Yom Kippur. Right? So Yom Kippur is the day on which the Jewish people received the Torah. Purim, say Chazal, was also a day on which the Jewish people accepted the Torah. Because says the Gemara in Shabbos, when God gave the Torah to the Jewish people at Har Sinai initially, as we all know, he took the mountain, suspended it over their heads, and said, look, you got a choice. Either take the Torah or I let go. They looked up, and they said, I think we'll go with the Torah. That sounds like a good idea. But in a sense, they were coerced into it. So, ask the Gemara, how can it be that we were coerced into accepting the Torah? I thought the Torah is supposed to be accepted by our own free will. So says the Gemara, well, during the days of Ahasuerus, after the miracle of Purim, the Jews subsequently accepted willingly that which they had accepted under coercion in the days of, at Har Sinai. So there was a Kabbalah HaTorah that was part and parcel of Purim. I would argue, based on Rav Huttner's understanding of the Vilna Gaon, that it's not coincidental that both Yom Kippur and Purim have an element of Kabbalah HaTorah associated with them. Because both Yom Kippur and Purim involve, in different ways, removing that which prevents us from receiving Torah. On Yom Kippur, we subjugate the Yetzer Hara. On Purim, we push aside anti-Semitism. Those are the two main reasons that are preventing us from accepting the Torah and making it part of our lives wholeheartedly. It stands to reason that both Yom Kippur and Purim, in that regard, should be accompanied by a Kabbalah HaTorah. Now, the truth is, this shtickle Torah, this idea, should weigh very heavily on us in America in particular. Because this Dvar Torah really places a tremendous responsibility on all of us. America, as we know, as Rav Moshe Zatzal famously said, is a Malchus Shel Chesed, is a kingdom of kindness. It's a place where we have freedom to practice our religion in ways that arguably we've never had in any Golus any time before in history. I mean, we live in a day and age where you can go to your non-Jewish employer and say, you know, I have to take off for Chol HaMoed. Yeah. And they'll say, okay, fine, you know, just tell us when, you know, it's yours. You want to make a mincha minyan in the office, fine. You want to have a dafyomi in the office, fine. You want to have a dafyomi on the Long Island Railroad, fine. You want to say slichas b'hav in the office, fine. You know, we have so many, Baruch Hashem, so many opportunities to be religious observant Jews to the hilt that we have in America that we've never had at any point in our galus. And no one is breathing down our necks. You know, not to say that there's no anti-Semitism in America, but it's certainly much, 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 much less than anything we've experienced, certainly in recent history and maybe in any time in the history of our galus. So you know what that means for us. It's a beautiful thing. But it places a tremendous responsibility on us. It means that there's only one reason that we can blame for the fact that we're not as good Jews as we possibly could be. We can only blame the Yetzer Hara. There's not much that we can pin on Shibud Malchus, on the anti-Semitism. So that means that part of, I think, what we're supposed to take away from Purim is that, yes, we're supposed to daven that the anti-Semitism which is in the world should be removed and use this, as we said before, as an opportunity to daven that just as Haman met his downfall, the modern day Haman should meet their downfalls as well. But it's also an opportunity for us to remind ourselves how easy it is for us, and therefore how much of an obligation we have to strengthen ourselves in Torah and mitzvahs, because there really isn't that much holding us back from doing what's right. If we live in a day and age, and we live in a place where it's so easy to be a religious Jew, you know, the biggest religious choices that we face is when you're walking down Avenue J or Main Street or whatnot, and you're trying to figure out, should I eat in this kosher pizza shop or in that kosher pizza shop? These are the big, questions which face us in our own day and age. So it puts an added achrayus, an added sense of responsibility on us. You know, if we have so much freedom, we have to use the freedom wisely. That's part of the lesson of Purim and Yom Kippurim as well. We should be zocha that this Purim which is coming upon us should be an end to the anti-Semitism which is in the world, and Be'ez Hashem it should be a chizik for us to recognize how we can improve ourselves. And if HaKadosh Baruch Hu has done a good job, Baruch Hashem, in making us very comfortable here in America, how much of an achrayus we have in trying to fight against the Yetzer Hara and trying to fulfill Ritzoneinu Lasos Ritzoncha, that ultimately our will is to do the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well. I want to wish everybody a Feilich in Purim. We will pick up Be'ez Hashem a week from tonight, Shushan Purim, or Soy Shushan Purim, I guess, is that more accurate?
We'll
Be'ez Hashem. Yeah, why not? Right. By then, we should be in a position to...
How come it says that even all the holidays...
We're going to be bought up.
Purim will not. Purim will always... Right. I thought that maybe because there will always be anti-Semitism.
Always be a little bit of anti-Semitism.
And we'll always need a Mordechai and an Esther.
Could be.
But why?
Could be. Even
Purim will always remain.
That even in the end of days, that Purim is going to have that. Or perhaps it will be important for us to always remember that there was anti-Semitism. Even once the problem is dealt with, but we should always remember that we had to deal with this during the many, many years that we were in Galus. Maybe that's, according to the Snohalif, maybe that's how you would explain it.
Who says it?
The Rambam
there
writes.
There won't be any...
Yeah, the Rambam writes based on a Medrash.
Meaning anymore, but Purim...
Yeah, yeah, the Rambam brings in Hilchus Megillah, based on a Medrash.
The negotiation.
Yes, Gemara on Shabbos. Yes, Gemara on Shabbos. Not off the top of my head. Does he quote it over here?
Beautiful.
The pays, I think.
Thank you so much.
I'll take a look at that.
No, it's wonderful. It's hard.